back to the LCD displays, which I'm now staring all the time, as you probably also, unless you are sleeping. So we have a backlight here, which is shining the light. And then we have a polarizer, meaning we are letting only the light which has a horizontal electric field going through. Then we have an electrode, which is basically how we apply our voltage. And then we have a liquid crystal, which means that we have this kind of crystalline things, whatever molecules they are, don't care at the moment. So they are not round, but this kind of rod looking. And they are not, they are randomly oriented, which means that light just goes through as it is. But if you put voltage, they will orient. And if they are oriented to this kind of lattice, so this is exactly the liquid crystal. So it makes a crystalline inside the liquid. And then what happens is that it changes the polarization of your light. And if and at the very end, you have another polarizer, which is actually different way than original. So here you let through only horizontal light, which is not passed here. So which means that your pixel is black. But if in the middle between these polarizers, you meet the liquid crystal, which is in a crystalline form, your polarization changes or it rotates, and then it can pass through the second polarizer and you have a light in this pixel. And this is kind of what happens in every pixel, and every pixel has a separate voltage source. So that's how you control your image. And basically, as you can see from a zoomed image, basically every pixel has three different pixels for all the colors to reproduce the whole spectrum of the colors. So that RGB, red, green, blue colors. So if you zoom in to your display pixel, you will see all these three there. And they are controlled this way. Nowadays, big thing is also optical telecommunication. So all the internet is going as a light. Sorry? Yeah, that's true. That's just to annoy you. Now I cannot get it away. That's even nicer. Now I can get it away, yeah. Controls was on the way. Controls are taken away. Okay. Good point. Okay. So optical telecommunications, all the internet is working with a light because that's faster than the electricity. And then basically you usually have a wavelength of 1500. So this is infrared light, not visible light. What you have traveling in this kind of a fiber. So fiber is kind of a wire for a light. So you have a high refractive index inside and your light is traveling through this core. And if it hits the edge of the core, it meets lower refractive index. And if you are in the interface of a lower, so this N2, N1, and so what you have at some point, because usually you refract, but if you come in a higher angle, what happens is you cannot anymore refract, but you get total internal reflection, everything is reflected back, and your light doesn't escape. So this is a big business nowadays. And of course, you would like to put all these in the same size than nowadays electronics. So you could fit all these fibers inside your phone and make your processor out of light, because that would be really much faster. But there's some limitations. So wavelength of visible light as we talked already, 390 to 700, depending on the color, there's a diffraction limit of Abbe, which we already discussed a little bit in the first lecture on fabrication. So the minimum kind of cross section here where you can focus your light with a lens depends on the wavelength. So it's basically your wavelength divided by 2 times refractive index times sine theta, which is the opening angle of this. So the higher you focus, the tighter, the wider the cone, the smaller you get the spot, but it's still very much limited. So for usually 300 nanometer, which is a green light, is about 200 nanometer is ultimate limitation. And we have this famous Abbe statue in Jena next to the university, which has this rule put in, and it really looks like this Death Star for all the nano optics. So it's not, is it even possible at all, the nano optics? And of course, since the title of this lecture was nano optics, of course it is possible, but not as a regular optics. But we have to go something else, which is called plasmonics. And by that, we can go around diffraction limit. There are certainly, of course, some other ways also, but this is the most common way to go around. And what is a plasmonics? So let's describe this kind of creature called surface plasmon polariton. And people are just talking about it nowadays, just a plasmon. It is a little bit wrong, but it's understandable. It's a long word. Surface plasmon polariton. So what is actually plain plasmon? So this is kind of a, if you have a metal, and why it is actually called plasmon, is that if you have a metal, we talked about metal, so they have a basically positive ions here on the back, and then you have a almost free electrons floating around. Now I don't draw them yet anywhere, but these free electrons, they kind of form electron plasma. So that's why the name plasmon, because the free electrons in the metal are kind of electron plasma or free electron gas, nowadays called more than the plasma, but it was originally called more like electron plasma. And now the, what is the plasmon? It's kind of wave of those. So you have here more electrons. Here you have a less electrons, so you have more positive voltage. And then you have again higher density of your electrons here and so on. So basically, if you make a plot of your electron density, you have here higher density, lower density, higher density, and this. And due to this higher density of electrons, here you have a negative charge here. Here you have a lower density, even less than should originally, so it's making a plus because of ions in the back, and here minus again. As you can see, this is kind of electromagnetic wave, or it's not electromagnetic wave, but a charge wave, density wave. Same way than a sound, when I talk now, sound is going in the air as a pressure wave. It's a similar pressure wave of electrons. And this can travel in a metal. Unfortunately, in a metal, this happens only above so-called plasma frequency, which is a minimum frequency where the electrons can oscillate. And usually, this is somewhere in a high UV. And above this plasma frequency, all metals are transparent. Unfortunately, because that's in the UV, we never see this. Because in the visible light, they are not transparent, as you know. There's no transparent metal. But if you think that this density wave is at the surface, so you have no wave there. Okay, let's draw it. Let's draw it this direction. Yeah, there might be room if I a little bit make room. You still see the electrons there, you know? So here you have a negative charge, and this is your surface. So this is metal here, and this is air, for example. Here you have a negative charge, then a positive charge, negative charge again. Of course, if you have a positive charge or negative charge on the surface, what you create is an electromagnetic wave, electric field from a positive to negative. And of course, there's somewhere second positive again. So you make this kind of electric field outside. In the metal, there's no electric fields, as you should remember from basic physics. Inside the metal, they are screened out, they are zero, but outside you have. And now this is kind of a electromagnetic wave. You can think it as a photon. It's a light. But it's coupled with this mechanical oscillations. And without these mechanical oscillations, this doesn't exist, this electric field. And also this electric field is actually, when it's formed, it's also driving these mechanical oscillations more. So it's a kind of this kind of combined hybrid mode. And this, if you calculate from a Maxwell equations, you end up to mode in the visible wavelengths. And basically, this electric field outside from a surface, as is kind of plotted here in the slide, so the intensity of that or amplitude of that electric field is going down exponentially. So it's not going very far, so it's called so-called near field or evanescent field, exponential decaying field. So it only exists at very close to the surface. Also, there is a little bit field also inside the metal. I said that inside the metal there's no field, but there's so-called screening effect which allows it a little bit go inside. And you have also even faster decaying exponential field inside your metal. So basically this means that your light is kind of bound to this surface. And this kind of mode is called surface plasmon polariton. And polariton is actually a general word in physics. It means some kind of a hybrid mode between material and a light. And here it is exactly. Your light part is this photon here outside the metal, and your material excitation is this mechanical oscillation. So it is exactly hybrid mode between material and a light. That's why it's called polariton. Okay, this I already kind of explained. So it decays exponentially, and so this is exactly nanoscale localized electromagnetic field. And this can be certainly below the refraction limit. So this decaying length here, for example, it can be 10 nanometer. Or even smaller. So this can go already in a nanoscale. So light is also electromagnetic field. Can we excite the surface, but not just by shining light to our metal surface? And answer is actually no, we cannot. So if you shine light to your metal surface at the home, the promoter will not much plasma going on. And this, the reason for this is that if we calculate the wave vector of a plasmon, so this means momentum of a plasmon, we end up to this kind of equation. If you are interested how to derive that, you start from a Maxwell equations and solve then in this situation. There's a book about this. And but the point is that for light, K is H bar omega. No, K is not that. What is there in the front? It's anyway directly related. Directly related to your, yeah, it's actually C. Yeah. So it's a direct line for light. K is C times omega, where omega is the frequency of your light. And this is actually this line here. And now, if you look the K vector for a plasmon, it makes this kind of function. So you, at some point when you are getting closer to your plasmon frequency, which is here at the one, you start to bend. So you increase your momentum with the same frequency. So if you look here at a certain frequency, for example, 0.6, your light has this kind of momentum and your plasmon has almost double the momentum. And now if you think that you want to couple your light to the plasmon, you know, from a physics, energy needs to survive. Energy is not disappearing. So it means that if you have an energy of this 0.6, whatever units, you have to have the same energy for a plasmon, but also the momentum needs to survive. And this is not possible. There's a big change in the momentum. So that's why it doesn't couple, because you cannot match the energy and the momentum at the same time. But there's a trick how to do that. One is so-called using a prism. So you increase your momentum inside the glass because you have a refractive index that increases your momentum. And then you have a total internal reflection here at the bottom. And you have a kind of exponential decaying field inside of this metal. And if the metal is thin enough so that your field is meeting the outside of your metal surface, you can generate plasmon here, because then you can match your K vector. Because the original K vector of original light is now increased due to prism, and here your plasmon K vector is compared to air inside of a glass. So you can have this coupled K vector high enough. And now you can actually, by changing the angle, you can determine what frequency you are putting in. Also, any kind of this near field generated, for example, if you have a high scattering source, that generates also near field, and you can couple plasmons, but much more randomly than this method. Here you have a high, very high precision to tune what you couple in. So this is so-called Kretschmann configuration. There's almost same as auto configuration where you just have a gap and you can couple from here to this metal surface. It sounds much easier since you don't need to have an electric field inside the metal, and you can make this as small as possible, but actually it's in a practical point of view, this is much harder to do compared to this. Because here you can just evaporate metal on your prism. Here you somehow have to make a gap, which is difficult to make a 100 nanometer gap. But then if you have the plasmons, they kind of behave same way than a light. So here is, for example, almost 20 years old measurement, where you have this kind of line fabricated on a metal surface. And you shine light here, you have a lot of scattering which launches plasmons both directions. And here you have this kind of bumps. And you basically make this kind of, if these bumps are exactly wavelength, half a wavelength apart from each other, you make this Bragg mirror, what we discussed earlier a little bit, that if you have a different layers with a different refractive index, and if they are matching half of the wavelength, actually quarter of the wavelength, then everything is mirrored away. And the same happens for plasmons here. So you have a reflection of your plasmons in this direction. So here they have this line scattering. So this is a microscope image, of course, drawn with arrows. And then you launch plasmons here, and they are in both directions. And in one direction, they are reflected here. And this is what you can measure. So you shine light here, and it's reflected there, and also going that direction. And what they also did, they put on second mirror, or this kind of beam splitter here. So there's a reflected plasmon. So this is not light, but a traveling plasmon. They are partially going through and partially reflected, because it's very thin line. And this is exactly what you see happening. And then they fabricated another mirror on the other side also, and they fabricated the different positions. So the light going through this mirror and this mirror has traveled, or sorry, I said light. I should say surface plasmon polaritons traveling through this mirror and this mirror have a slightly different distance, and you can see interference of a surface plasmon polaritons here at this point, and you can tune that interference by changing the position of the mirror. And by that you can tune, construct in interference in this direction or this direction. And the other direction is a destructive interference. So it really behaves like a light. You can even make an interferometer out of that. But as we discussed, you cannot couple it in. Same reason you cannot couple it out. But of course here, you are emitting it with a microscope, so you are somehow coupling it out. What is actually happening here is that there's a molecule which is reacting to the plasmon, and this is fluorescing the light out. So molecules can be excited by plasmons same way that they can be excited by light. This is also an interesting thing. Okay. Now we know what is surface plasmon polariton, and we know that you can put it in a very tiny space next to the interface. That's still not fully in a nanoscale. It's a nanoscale in this direction, but not in this direction. But if we take our surface, roll it to a ball, we come to localized surface plasmons. And this is exactly shown here. So basically, there's two ways how you can think it. One is exactly what I explained. So you have a surface plasmon polariton on the surface, and then you take your surface and you roll it, the tube or ball, and then, okay, let's draw it here below. We don't need these anymore. We take this surface somehow roll it to the ball. And then we have a similar surface Poisson polariton traveling here. So you, it means that at some point you have more electrons, so you have negative charge. Then it goes to zero, and then you have less electrons and you have a positive charge. And for to be able to sustain this surface Poisson polariton, this circle around your surface, it has to match the wavelength of your surface Poisson polariton. Because when going around once, you come to the position and you interfere with yourself. If it's destructive, you kill yourself. If it's constructive, you enhance yourself, the wave. It means that this surface around your particle had to match the wavelength of your surface Poisson polariton. And that's why only certain frequencies are possible. And that frequency depends on the size of your particle. Another way to explain is that your particle is smaller than the wavelength, how it usually is. But still, the wavelength of a surface plasmon is actually much smaller than the light. Remember that. So we can also put it in a nanoscale in that sense. Actually, you can see it here because your k is bigger and the wavelength is 1 over k or 2 pi over k. So it means that your k increases very high. It means your wavelength goes to 10 nanometers. So this is also one way to think it as a nanoscale light. Okay, but your particle is bigger than the wavelength of a free light. So this is regular light. So you can think here that the electric field is upwards. It means that your electrons are pushed down. So all the electrons are in this side. Then comes the next part of your wave. So you can think this as a time or position. Doesn't matter. And then the electric field turns down and your electrons are pushed up. So they start oscillate up and down your electrons. And some of these matches to the mechanical resonance of your electrons. And then you can excite localized surface plasmon. Or you can think it is this way. It's basically the same thing. Same thing. And always when you have this kind of construction smaller than the wavelength, you can have a localized surface plasmon. And the sharper the edge, the more dense the electric field you have. For example, here is two particles, and then you make them close together. So this is local field enhancement factor. So I mean probably intensity. Local field intensity enhancement factor. And you can see that if you have a single particle, the distance is long, you have a certain resonance frequency which is enhanced. But when you put these close together, you start to generate so-called gap mode, where this plasmon of this particle and plasmon of this particle, they kind of combine and you generate even higher enhancement factor and your wavelength shifts. And then you start to have also higher order structures. Also here, you have this kind of triangular particle. The higher field is exactly in the sharp corners. So you can really tune your particle, where to make a highest electric field due to plasmons and what is the wavelength of that. Here is a couple of examples. So here's a composition. So material depends because the plasma frequency change, that changes basically everything. So here is a gold platinum, palladium, copper, silver. You can see that all, if you keep a size of your nanoparticle same, the color changes because of your resonance frequency is changing. And for example, gold, it looks like red because you have a plasma resonance at the green. So if you shine white light to your nanoparticles, you are generating green surface plasmons, which means that you are taking green energy away from your light because these plasmons take energy. So what is reflected is basically everything else except green, and opposite color for green is red, so it looks red. Same way in all other particles. Also, when you start changing the size, so this is 5 nanometer, 30, 60, 80, 100 nanometer size of particles, you can see that the color changes not so dramatically than in the material. And also the geometry. So here you have more sharp corners, you have a different frequency due to that. Then you have rods, circular, and so on. And you basically, you all have seen nanoparticles in old buildings, especially old churches, like a Notre Dame window here in this picture. So all these colors, especially red, is made by nanoparticles. Some of them are made by molecules, but many of them are made by nanoparticles. So it is really ancient technique. Of course, in that time, people didn't know that they make a nanoparticles, but they just got a nice color. Also, you can think other way around. So we had a nanoparticle, metallic particle surrounded by air or whatever, the electric material, not conducting material. We can have a metal film in a hole. So that's exactly the similar thing. But now you have a conducting material outside and a hole non-conducting inside. Basically, just you are just changing the refractive indexes. So you are putting your interface upside down. And if you think like a just direct interface, if you swap the metal here, air here, nothing changes. Situation is exactly the same. Same is for particle. So now you make, instead of particle, you make a hole. And you have a similar plasma resonance of that hole and the metal particle. And this is a famous experiment by Ebbesen some time ago. And it was actually a very funny story how he found this. Because he was, he wanted to make this kind of, what is this called? Filter for some liquid. So he wanted to drill holes in the metal, and he went to take this metal to the workshop and drill these tiny holes by some laser or something. And then he measured the size of a hole by putting light through. So depending on the size of a hole, you should get a certain amount of light through. And there was much more light coming through than should. And he just went back to the workshop complaining that you are not doing proper job. Your holes are way too big. And they did it many times, and always there was too much light. At some point, he put it to microscope and noticed they had, yeah, the holes are actually small enough. But because you generate plasmons to these holes, they radiate on the other side. And it looks like light is going more through. So this is how it was found out. So plasmonics is our nanophotonics